It's Wednesday, August 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, Russian bombers take off from Iran to attack Syria. The UN condemns the bombing of a hospital in Yemen. Devastating floods continue to plague Louisiana. We'll check in on campaign 2016. Simone Biles is golden again in Rio. And we'll hear about two new movies opening this week. It's all on today's International Edition. The U.S.-led coalition fighting the Islamic State group in Iraq and Syria cleared the way for Russian bombers to pass through Iraq on their way to Syria from an airbase in Iran. Colonel Chris Garver, the coalition spokesman, told reporters by teleconference from Baghdad Tuesday that the Russians notified the coalition about their planned movement through Iraqi airspace as part of the Memorandum of Understanding for Safety of Flight made between Russia and the U.S. months ago.
What I will say is the Russians did notify the coalition as per the Memorandum of Understanding for Safety of Flight. They activated that system as we have in the past. They informed us they were coming through, and we ensured safety of flight as those bombers passed through the area and toward their target.
Russia announced earlier Tuesday that a group of its warplanes took off from an airbase in Iran for the first time to carry out airstrikes against militants in Syria. Russia's defense ministry says that Tu-23 M3 long-range bombers and Su-34 frontline bombers were launched from Hamadan Air Base, located about 280 kilometers southwest of Tehran. It said the strikes hit five large warehouses with weapons, ammunition, and fuel, and the training camps of Islamic State and the Jabhat al-Nusra terror group in the provinces of Aleppo, Deir ez-Zor, and Idlib. Colonel Garver said that the Russian military abided by the Memorandum of Understanding that allows coalition forces to know that Russian planes will be moving over coalition areas.
Well, the MOU requirement is for them to let us know when they're flying through areas that we potentially could have an interaction. And so every time that you have to ensure safety of flight, that's when you activate the MOU. And so if they're flying from somewhere over Iraqi airspace, we, the Iraqi Air Force, flies in Iraqi airspace. The coalition's flying inside Iraqi airspace. So we would expect them to activate the MOU to let us know that they're potentially impacting on our operations.
Garver did confirm that there are several Islamic State targets in Deir ez-Zor, but he said the coalition did not see concentrations of Islamic State fighters in Aleppo and Idlib. A U.S. analyst, meanwhile, says the Russian bombers that used an Iranian airbase to attack militants in Syria marks an escalation of the conflict in the country. Speaking on Tuesday, Andrew Tabler, a senior fellow of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, said the escalation was not necessarily a military one, but is illustrative of a greater alignment between Russia and Iran.
It allows them to bomb more targets with greater efficiency, but they get a political bounce out of it as well. The Ministry of Defense yesterday in Moscow announced that apparently some sort of deal with the United States on Syria was imminent, at the same time that Russia's being singled out for stealing emails from the Democratic National Committee. We can see very clearly that the Russians are playing a very strong political cards in places like Syria, while the United States is at best playing defense.
U.S. officials say Washington was aware that Russia had talked about the possibility of flying planes out of Iran since late last year, although Moscow's decision to do so on Tuesday did come as a surprise. Tabler said the move was hugely embarrassing for the administration of Barack Obama and represents a kind of brinkmanship where Russia is trying to force the U.S. president into a settlement in Syria. According to Tabler, Russia is wary that Obama's successor, due to be elected in November, will be much more aggressive in Syria, particularly if it turns out to be Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton.
It's just hugely embarrassing for the Obama administration. I mean, it's as if the Russians are forcing President Obama to completely reverse track when the White House insists that they're not reversing track on Syria, that they still support the ouster of Bashar al-Assad. I think this kind of brinksmanship is trying to force the Obama administration into a settlement in Syria before the next president comes to power. And the Russians believe that the next president, particularly if it's Hillary Clinton, would be much more aggressive militarily in places like Syria.
Tabler says that Moscow's role in shoring up the Assad regime could lead to a longer and much more costly struggle against the Islamic State group in both Iraq and Syria.
In Syria, their role in backing up the regime of Bashar al-Assad probably means that his staying in power means that the refugees will not go back. And the refugees going back is a sort of bottom line for Western countries because of the humanitarian aspect and the associated threat of those refugee populations being taken advantage of by terrorists. And this is a huge issue, one that might keep us from wiping out ISIS and instead spreading out the problem for the next president.
Andrew Tabler is a senior fellow of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Russia has been carrying out strikes to bolster President Bashar al-Assad's forces for nearly a year, but until now they had flown all of their missions from either Russia or from Syria itself. Human Rights Watch has called on nations participating in the upcoming Convention on Conventional Weapons in Geneva to condemn the use of airdropped incendiary weapons in civilian areas in Syria. The New York-based group said Tuesday that the joint Syrian-Russian military operation has used incendiary weapons at least 18 times in the past 9 weeks. HRW says that local activists, human rights organizations, first responders, and media organizations have reported the use of incendiary weapons on at least 40 other occasions that could not be verified through photographs or video footage. Meanwhile, the relief organization Save the Children says the situation around the northern city of Aleppo has become particularly desperate. Air raids on two rebel-held districts of Syria's battleground second city killed 19 civilians Tuesday, including 3 children. Hella Tornig-Schmidt is Save the Children's chief executive officer. She's also a former prime minister of Denmark. She says the danger in Aleppo is not only from bombs, but also from a lack of doctors who can treat the wounded.
If you live in an area that is getting bombarded all the time and where you don't know where that is coming from, and the injuries are very wide, but some of the injuries that we see are injured to people's limbs, of course, injuries to people's heads, burned injuries. If you actually are targeted, you get burned injuries, and then you are in a situation where you don't have medical experts that can treat this.
Tornig Schmidt says that disease is also a huge problem in areas under attack because many times hospitals and other healthcare facilities are targeted.
Our people inside Syria are saying that at least one third of the injuries that they see are children. So this is what I'm urging the world to see, that when you have a besieged city and the people who are left there, they're not the strongest people. They're people who for many reasons couldn't leave. Maybe these are children that only have one parent or even are orphaned. These are very weak people.
Hella Tornig-Schmidt says that what would help is a 48-hour ceasefire to allow the injured and sick to be removed from Aleppo. The United Nations has called for an urgent humanitarian ceasefire in the city and is pushing for a resumption of peace talks that have failed to end the 5-year conflict in which more than 250,000 people have been killed and some 11 million displaced. Among some of the other top stories in the world, devastating floods continue to ravage Louisiana. The son of Mexican drug lord Joaquin El Chapo Guzman is abducted in a restaurant. Russia was stripped of a relay gold medal from the 2008 Beijing Olympics after one of its athletes tested positive for steroids. American gymnast Simone Biles won her fourth gold medal in Rio. And former FIFA president João Havelange has died at age 100. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. An airstrike by the Saudi-led military coalition in Yemen killed 9 civilians east of Sana'a on Tuesday. Residents said that the third deadly air raid, reported to have hit civilian targets since Saturday, hit the home of a local leader of Yemen's armed Houthi group while he was out. The attack killed the man's father and 8 members of his family. Saudi Arabia's foes during more than a year of war, the Houthis are Yemen's dominant political force and are fighting against Saudi-backed loyalists of the country's exiled government. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has condemned the airstrike on a Yemeni hospital operated by the humanitarian group Doctors Without Borders. That airstrike killed at least 11 people on Monday. As Lisa Schlein reports, the UN Secretary General is deeply disturbed by the intensification of airstrikes and continued ground fighting and shelling, especially in populated areas.
The attack on the Abs Hospital in Haja Governorate is the latest of more than 70 health centers that have been damaged or destroyed since March 2015. That is when the Saudi Arabian coalition, an ally of Yemen's government, entered the civil war to prevent a takeover by Houthi rebels. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani tells VOA many of these health facilities have been deliberately targeted.
Both sides have been responsible. In some cases, there has been the use of medical facilities for military purposes as well.
The World Health Organization reports 73 patients were in the hospital at the time of the bombing. They included 23 patients in surgery, 25 in the maternity ward, as well as 13 newborns and 12 patients in the pediatric ward. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says all remaining patients and staff have been evacuated from the hospital that was partially destroyed.
Hajar Governorate is already suffering from serious disruption in health services delivery and shortages of medical staff as continued ground fighting led to closure of health facilities and departure of medical personnel. Haja hosts the larger number of IDPs in the country. In addition to the loss of lives of health workers, the cessation of the hospital will further deprive access to essential health services among the conflict-affected population.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is calling for a prompt, effective, and impartial investigation into the attack. He notes hospitals and medical personnel are explicitly protected under international humanitarian law. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, we'll look at the latest from the U.S. presidential campaign. Residents of Louisiana try to recover from devastating floods, and the worst is not over. And we'll hear about 2 new movies opening this week. This is VOA News.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and 2 advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton urged supporters in the critical swing state of Pennsylvania Tuesday to register to vote. saying she's not taking anybody anywhere for granted in the race for the White House. Speaking at a voter registration event in Philadelphia, Clinton said the stakes could not be higher in the race against Republican Donald Trump, and she warned against complacency in the remaining months before Election Day.
So don't be complacent, my friends, because even though we're doing fine right now, I'm not taking anybody anywhere for granted. We're going to work hard these next 85 days, and I can't do it without your help.
Clinton said that the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro are an example of American achievement, arguing that Donald Trump is offering a pessimistic view of the country.
I was thinking the other day, when Donald Trump speaks, he speaks about fear. He speaks about such negativity and such pessimism. And then I watched the Olympics, and it's exactly the opposite. You have young people going out doing their best every day to get prepared to compete. And that's what we're going to do in America. There is nothing we can't do if we put our minds to it.
Republican Donald Trump met with law enforcement officers in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the site of ongoing protests over the fatal shooting of a black man by a black police officer. Trump later told a rally that he is outside what he called the rigged political system and will work to improve the lives of African-American communities.
The African-American community has been taken for granted for decades by the Democratic Party, and look how they're doing. It's time to break with the failures of the past. I want to offer Americans a new and much better future. It's time for rule by the people, not rule for the special interests which we have right now.
Demonstrations turned violent in Milwaukee Saturday after the police shooting of Civil Smith by a black policeman. Police say the 23-year-old man was fleeing a traffic stop and had a gun in his hand when he turned toward the officer, who then opened fire. The state of Wisconsin is investigating. At least 40,000 homes were damaged and 10 people killed in unprecedented Louisiana floods. The U.S. state's governor, John Bel Edwards, said at a news conference on Tuesday that the state and federal officials are working as hard as they can to help people devastated by the high waters.
I want everyone to understand that we are still very much in an emergency search and rescue response mode for much of the Florida parishes. Saving life is the most important priority that we have. We're going to dedicate every available resource to that effort until it's no longer required.
Beginning Friday, a torrent of rain inundated the southern part of the state over a 48-hour period. Days later, many homes and businesses were still underwater. Some residents did return to their flood-damaged homes and businesses for the first time on Tuesday, finding them pretty much a soggy mess. Brian Booth is one of those in Denham Springs whose home was severely damaged by the floodwaters.
Basically, the Amite River was running right through here. I mean, they call this neighborhood River Run. It was definitely River Run. I mean, I have some video of the current running, and it was just, you couldn't really walk out there. It would sweep you off your feet.
Gerald and Betty Jordan said that the floods destroyed their home and most of their belongings.
Well, I'm 80 years old. I worked all my life, and most of it's gone right here. And we'll just start again.
Well, when you've worked all your life and what you have is gone overnight, I mean, I think that makes most anyone emotional.
Days after the rain, the Amite River is still over its banks and the catastrophic flooding continues. Crews from the U.S. Geological Survey were measuring the water flow to get an idea of just how high the river is. Authorities in Ascension Parish, that is, south of Baton Rouge, say they're preparing for the worst as rising waterways begin to dump their contents and flood thousands of homes in the process. Officials say the area is experiencing massive backwater flooding since waters from the Amite River and others in the area don't have anywhere to go. A California man was arrested on arson charges Monday for allegedly sparking a wildfire that exploded over the weekend, destroying more than 175 homes, businesses, and other structures in a Northern California town. Lake County Sheriff Brian Martin said Damon Anthony Pashlik, 40, of Clear Lake was arrested on 17 counts of arson and is in jail.
So last night we announced the arrest of an arson suspect. He was arrested on 17 counts of arson. Obviously, the Clayton fire is one of those counts of arson. We're actively working on the investigation. CAL FIRE investigation has taken lead on this. They developed information, obviously, that led up to his arrest. And we're working closely with the district attorney's office to make sure that justice is served.
Pashlik is suspected of causing numerous fires in Lake County over the past year. Sheriff Brian Martin says his capture has eased the anxiety in Lake County.
A tremendous amount of relief. A lady spoke with me this morning. She says, last night was the first night I slept well in a long time. People are on edge and concerned because they know that this fire activity was not normal. It didn't occur naturally, that someone or some people were responsible for it. And to know that the CAL FIRE is able to identify somebody and get somebody in custody is a great relief for our community.
California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection Director Ken Pimlott said the blaze in the town of Lower Lake has caused more than $10 million worth of damages and left dozens of families homeless. The wind-whipped fire had spread to more than 15.5 square kilometers in the Lower Lake area, about 145 kilometers north of San Francisco. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. At the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, American gymnast Simone Biles took home her fourth gold medal and her fifth medal of the Games by capturing the floor exercise title on Tuesday. Biles finished with a score of 15.966 for her routine. U.S. teammate Ali Raisman took the silver medal with a 15.5 to give her a third medal during Rio and six overall in her Olympic career. Amy Tinkler of Great Britain earned the bronze medal. Also Tuesday, Russia was stripped of a relay gold medal from the 2008 Beijing Olympics after one of its female runners tested positive for steroids in a reanalysis of her doping samples. That means that Belgium stands to be upgraded to the relay gold, with Nigeria moving up to silver and Brazil to the bronze. Time to take a brief look at some of what is trending on social media. For that, we turn to our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee. Hello, G.
Hi, Dave. Have you seen the photo of Jamaican sprinter Usain Bolt running way ahead of his rivals during the men's 100-meter dash?
You mean the one where he's smiling at everybody else who's losing?
He's smiling and posing. But people also wanted to know who took that unforgettable photo.
So, do we know?
Yes. Sydney-based photographer Cameron Spencer. The online verdict seems to be that he took one of the best photographs of Bolt. What do you think?
I think it's pretty good.
I think it's pretty good. And he's a staff photographer with Getty Images, and he captioned the iconic photo as this: "Always a great day at work when the world's fastest man pops by. Hashtag Getty Sport." More than 8,000 people liked that tweet, which is quite high for someone that people didn't really know well until this Olympics.
Now, what else is trending on social media?
A popular hashtag Tuesday afternoon is hashtag Justin Deactivated Party. And of course, we're referring to the Canadian pop singer Justin Bieber. The VOA News account tweeted, "Justin Bieber has gone nuclear in war with fans of Selena Gomez by deleting his Instagram."
Now, what's going on there?
Well, they were going back and forth on the photo sharing app before he turned his account into private, which means not everyone can see it, and then ultimately deleting his account. Are you following him on there?
I do not follow Justin Bieber. I follow a few other people, like Adele, but not Justin Bieber.
Oh, okay. Well, he used to be the sixth biggest Instagram user. Not anymore, I guess. And by deleting his account, he upset many of his followers. One of his fans tweeted this: "Justin is really forgetting who pays his bills. Watch me download his next album illegally." And another person wrote, "Deactivating social media accounts is the adult version of a toddler temper tantrum."
Very harsh. That's VOA social media reporter G. Abby Lee. You can follow us at VOA_IE. The summer blockbuster season is winding down at the movies, and VOA's Lori London talked to film critic Jeff Howard about two new films opening this week.
War Dogs is from director Todd Phillips, who did the Hangover trilogy. And this is his first foray into, you know, instead of these crazy madcap comedies, it's based on true events about two two friends in their early 20s living in Miami Beach during the Iraq War who really exploit the U.S. government in terms of their procuring process. And they're putting in bids to the U.S. military for contracts, and they're arms dealers. But they get in over their heads really quick when they land, get this, a $300 million deal to arm the Afghan military. Now, this all really happened. Now, when you get to when they're doing like little deals, you know, they're kind of off the radar. But when you're doing $300 million, they came in $50 million below any other contractor, and people start getting involved that are pretty shady. So it stars Jonah Hill, and it also stars one of my favorite actors out there, is Miles Teller. And these guys are funny. They're engaging, but they're doing things like delivering guns to the U.S. military in Iraq over, like, the Triangle of Death. So not only is Bradley Cooper, Todd Phillips, the director, his good luck charm, he has a cameo in the movie, is also an arms dealer, but the movie is absurd just to see how crazy the government can go and how these 20-somethings can con the U.S. government, you know? And I thought it was really engaging. It's got excitement. It's got it's crazy. You can't even make this stuff up. So I think this is one of the best films of the summer. And Jonah Hill, again, turns himself into a completely different character than he's done in the past. So I actually really enjoyed this film, and I think a lot of people will too.
Excellent. And then for the kids, of course, we've got Kubo and the Two Strings. Tell us about it.
Kubo, oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is one of my favorite films of the year. And this is from the same studio that brought you Coraline, Box Trolls, and the other big popular one was Paranorman that came out a few years ago. This is all based on Japanese mythology. And it's about a little boy and his magical instrument that battles gods and monsters, including the vengeful Moon King. And he goes on this adventure trying to find these special armor in order to battle these gods. And the animation is so rich because it's done in stop-motion animation. Remember Nightmare Before Christmas? So it's been, you know, years in the making. It takes a long time to take a picture and move the models. It's done old-school animation, but it's beautiful, and it's all respectful of the culture, and it's got some of the greatest voice talent out there, Charlize Theron, Ralph Fiennes, Rooney Mara, George Takei, and, of course, the great Matthew McConaughey.
That's VOA's Lori London talking about two new films that opened this week. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook, we're at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Tracy Carter directed our program. Jimmy Cook was our engineer. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
International observers and rights monitors have expressed grave concern over the reported mass execution earlier this month of some 24 Sunni Iranians. There are few details available about the individuals executed, but most, if not all, were ethnic Kurds and had been held at Gohardasht prison and were accused by the government of terrorist activity. They allegedly have been charged with the crime of enmity against God. There are reports that the prisoners had been tortured in order to elicit confessions and that their trials were unfair, short, and secret. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayd Raad al-Hussein said that the application of overly broad and vague criminal charges, coupled with a disdain for the rights of the accused to due process and a fair trial, have in these cases led to a grave injustice. Human Rights Watch said Iran's mass execution of prisoners on August 2nd is a shameful low point in its human rights record. With at least 230 executions since January 1st, Iran is yet again the regional leader in executions, but a laggard in implementing the so far illusory penal code reforms meant to bridge the gap with international standards. In its most recent report on human rights worldwide, the State Department said that in Iran there were severe restrictions of civil liberties, including the freedoms of expression, religion, and assembly, as well as abuse of due process. The report noted that the Iranian government disproportionately targeted minority groups, including Kurds, Arabs, Azeris, and Baluchis, for arbitrary arrest, prolonged detention, and physical abuse, and that the government's application of the death penalty disproportionately affected ethnic minorities. Regarding the reported mass execution of the Kurdish-Iranian prisoners, State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner said that the United States reaffirms our calls for Iran to respect and protect human rights and to ensure fair and transparent judicial proceedings in all cases. Mr. Toner noted that the United States has consistently expressed concern about Iran's human rights record through a range of channels, and that the United States would continue to highlight that record within the United Nations framework and elsewhere.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's 4.